welcome to this morning's presentation. My name is Rabbi Dan Roth, and I'm the founder and director of a project called Torah Live. Anybody have a Torah Live? I'm going to change that momentarily. Here's a sample of some of our work.
What if you could learn Torah by experiencing it?
In the next film, we're going to be learning the laws of Tfilas Aderech,
the laws of ribs,
smiling, and ultimate joy,
power, and hidden mysteries of the Sefer Torah,
the laws of the Midas Kim.
Let's familiarize ourselves with the various parts of this being.
Nitilas Yadayim, the biblical command to wash our hands before eating bread, is something many people practice without paying too much attention to.
Do you have someone a cloth marker? His only thing is to make cloth.
We're helping to build the future role of the Torah. We are celebrating together with our brothers our return to Jerusalem.
In the following series, we'll look at the damage caused by anger. The Torah source is dealing with this negative trait and methods to overcome it.
And yet, as rampant as Ribbis is, the study of Ribbis is sorely neglected.
So, any utensil used for boiling, baking, frying, roasting, grilling, all require immersion.
Our Torah is filled with a wealth of information on this subject. It contains real wisdom about what it takes to become a leader, the qualities one must have, and one's personal responsibility as a leader.
Join the adventure.
Here we are in Torah Live Shabbos Lab, checking my new suit for Shabbos. Here we are at Masada.
As Torah Live explores what it means to be a Torah observant Jew in the modern world, Torah Live videos are created using cutting edge special effects.
Sample of our work. There's over 100 hours worth of educational multimedia material. The materials have been produced at part of 600 schools, schools, outreach organizations around the world. It's become so popular it's even on many LL flights. And this morning we're going to be showing just one of the topics. There's 32 topics to date: Tefillin, Tzitzis, Ribbis, Maisa, Mezuzah, Brochus, Kashrus, many more. And this morning we've chosen one of the topics, which is going to be a video on the laws of Ribbis, just the basics of Ribbis. Before we show that video, one more introductory video, which is how all the material is available to everybody at home.
We've hired data entry experts, graphic artists, programmers, and we've completely revamped the site. Let me show you some of the new features. First of all, we have lots of new courses on smiling and positivity, on anger management, on traveling, on tefillin, on leadership, and loads more. The first couple of videos in any course are free. The next has a half a log, which means you can watch it for free. You just need to sign up with your username and password. The rest of the videos have a full log, which means to be added next month. Each month, new videos are going to be added. Next month, we have Kiddush Hashem coming out, about a Jew's obligation to make a positive impression on the outside world. Then we're going to start rolling out 50 videos on the laws of Shabbos, 39 on the Malachot, and others on Muktzah, Kiddush, Havdalah, medicine on Shabbos, and more. You can see our 5-year production list in the document below. Remember, our vision is to translate the entire Torah into the language of our generation. Every good character trait, every important hashkofa, every mitzvah, every halacha. The 25 topics we have done today is nothing compared to what still needs to be done. Once you're logged in, you can begin watching all the videos. The database keeps track of every video you've watched, putting a little I symbol by those that you've already seen. When all the videos in the course have been completed, you can download a certificate of completion, personalized with your name along with the course you've completed. You can take online assessments on the material you've watched. They contain multiple choice questions, drag and drop, true-false, drop-down, and hotspot questions where you have to touch the screen to point to the right answer. Teachers can access a learning management dashboard that shows them exactly which students have watched which videos, which assessments they took. Teachers also have access to teacher versions. This is multimedia material that they use as they are teaching. It's not a video of me on the screen, but they are the instructors using the great graphics and short sound bites and clips that Torah Life provides for them. There are instructors' guides that they can download to show them exactly what they're meant to be teaching for every slide. There are also student workbooks, exciting posters that they can use to advertise their classes. Schools have the option to make their own assessments and even their own material. Both the self-running videos and the teacher material are both now accessible through the Torah Life website, and they work on multiple platforms. The video player has all kinds of cool features. It allows you to play back at various speeds, rewind 10 seconds, and if you're lucky enough to have two screens, you can press over here to pull it out to a separate window. But the coolest function has to be the closed captioning, which not only helps the hard of hearing, but allows the videos to be enjoyed in French, Hebrew, Spanish, Russian, and German. The videos used to be available to purchase on DVDs, but who has DVD players nowadays? So, Torah Life has moved into USB sticks. They're the size of a credit card, and the tab flips open and allows you to stick it into your USB port. Sign up now and enjoy the most incredible Torah content on the web today and become a part of a world-changing revolution.
Okay, fine. So, introductions over with, we can now proceed with the actual content for today, which, as I said, is going to be a series of four or five videos on the laws of realists. Introductory.
Charge interest? But I'm not a businessman. What's that going to do with me? Appreciate it.
Remus, I'm not a businessman. What's it got to do with me?
Yoshi, can I have your kiss? I'll give you my Disney next week.
Next week? No way. Why should I wait?
Fine, I'll give you my lollipop too.
Deal.
Remus, it's got nothing to do with me. I'm not a businessman.
Hey, great game, Ivy.
Hey, that's a really nice phone.
Thanks, I just got it, actually.
I'm looking into getting one of those, but my bank says I've got no credit to make the payments.
Oh, man.
Hey, I know. Why don't you just put it onto my credit card? I know you're for the money.
Really? So you do that for me?
Yeah, just make the payment straight onto my account. It's really no trouble.
Thanks, man.
The laws of interest? What does that have to do with me? I'm not a businessman. Excuse me. Miriam! I was just on my way to you. Here's that bottle of oil you lent me yesterday.
But Dina, this is a full bottle. The one I lent you yesterday was half empty.
Don't worry about it.
Ribbis? Not us. We're not businessmen. Oh, Shia. Side-by-side doors. And we can pay in installments.
Never before in history have we had the variety of financial structures we have today. Bank accounts, pension funds, mortgages, paying in installments, late penalty fees, foreign exchanges, A few hundred years ago, none of this would have been possible.
A few hundred years ago, if you bought an item and wanted to pay in installments over a year, you'd have to physically go to the seller once a month for 12 months. Not practical at all. There were no post-dated checks or credit cards. Until recently, these forms of payment just didn't exist. Today's financial structures, however, make Rivis a daily occurrence.
According to Rivis experts, 90% of contracts today contain clauses that infringe on the laws of Rivis. Here, in the event that the sum is not paid in full by the agreed by date, customer will be fined a late penalty of 1% of the unpaid amount per month. And yet, as rampant as Rivis is, the study of Rivis is sorely neglected. We teach our children about Shabbos, about prayer, about blessings. But Rivis? It is a topic rarely, if ever, studied, despite the fact that it comes up daily.
When a class of school children was asked about Rivis, 30% of them said it no longer applied today.
Well, on the back of every bus, I see signs advertising Rivis. My dad has a mortgage with Rivis. The bills that come say Rivis. Everywhere I look, I see Rivis. It must be like the laws of sacrifices that aren't relevant today. When Mashiach comes, then we'll keep it.
In the coming series, Torah Live will attempt to correct the situation by offering an introductory course about the laws of Rivis.
We will learn what is Rivis and why is it forbidden. The different forms of Rivis. Rivis as it applies to borrowing objects. The prohibition of paying interest with words and non-monetary payments. Who does Rivis apply to? Heter Iska, which is a halakhically permissible way of restructuring a loan so that it becomes an investment rather than a loan.
We may not be businessmen, but the laws of Rivis sure apply to us as well.
Interest is forbidden, whether it is a one-off additional payment, such as a loan for $10 on condition the person returns $12, or an ongoing monthly percentage. Whenever money is added above the principal amount, it is Rivis. Rivis applies not just to borrowing money, but to borrowing other objects as well. As the Torah says, do not cause your brother to take interest, whether it is interest for money, interest for food, or interest for anything else, interest is usually taken. This is true whether you pay back with the same kind of item the loan was for, or with a different kind. Rivis is forbidden even if the borrower happily agrees to pay the interest. For example, a person may wish to buy a new home and may not have the funds to purchase it on his own. In such cases, he would be only too happy to take a loan with interest, as it provides him with an opportunity he would otherwise not have. Nevertheless, it is forbidden.
Furthermore, even if the lender doesn't ask for it, but the borrower gives for his own goodwill, as a sign of appreciation, it is still forbidden.
Oh, really? It wasn't a problem. I had it lying around the house anyway.
No, really, you've helped me so much. Just for your troubles, please.
No, really, it's okay.
In this regard, Rivis differs from other monetary laws, such as stealing or overcharging. But the person being taken advantage of could forgo his rights if he wishes. Rivis is unique in that even if the borrower wants to pay, it is still forbidden. Some explain this law with the following scenario. It's disgusting. We don't save our brother just because of what we will gain in return. We save him because he's our flesh and blood. That is why the verses about charging interest repeatedly mention the word brother. If your brother becomes impoverished, don't cause your brother to take interest. Let your brother live with you. God wants us to save our fellow Jew because we are brothers, part of the bond.
Judaism's way of looking at the world, explains Rav Shimshon Karl Hirsch, is that our money is not absolutely our own. It is God's, given to us, on condition. God commands us to place some of our assets, which are really His, but which happen to be in our hands, into the hands of our brother, so that he may not only subsist, but continue his business endeavors. His earnings from that money are therefore entirely his own. If we were to demand any part of these earnings, we would be taking a bite, as it were, from his personal assets. For this reason, the Torah concludes the prohibition of ribis with the words, "Be'orei sam elokecha," you should fear your God. This is the primary reason for the prohibition against charging ribis. Were it not for the fear of God, charging interest could be justified from a human and social standpoint. It is because you recognize God as your God, as the sustainer of your lot, that you are forbidden to charge interest. Other approaches to the reason for ribis have also been given. A person may say, "But I will lose out." On the contrary, one who lends with interest, say the sages, he will suffer financially. On the other hand, a person who lends with our ribis is promised great blessing. The Torah concludes the laws of ribis with the words, "The man yivarechacha adunoy elihecha, v'chol mishlach yodecha, ala oretz asher atov v'oshom adurishna," so that God will bless you in every undertaking. You may not profit in this venture, but God promises that he will prosper in other areas. And who could be a better guarantor than that? Having familiarized ourselves with the basic concept of ribis, let's look at its various forms. There are five examples of ribis. Everyone understands that to lend $100 in return for $110 is ribis. This is called choiv derech halvoa, a debt created by a loan. And it's forbidden because any time you borrow and return more than you borrowed, it is ribis. The strictest case of this is where the interest is agreed upon from the outset. This form of ribis, known as ribis katuta, pre-arranged ribis, is also min ha-Torah, biblically forbidden. Whereas, if there is no agreement from the outset, but the lender asks for an additional payment later on, or the borrower decided to give it of his own accord later on, it is ribis derabbanan, rabbinically forbidden ribis. The second form of ribis is called choiv machlas mecher, debt created by a seller, and refers to cases where the debt came about through a purchase.
It says you have $2,000 outstanding on your tab. Can you settle up today?
I'm sorry, I don't really have it right now. I'll tell you what, I'll come back next month and I'll give you $2,500 for the extra time you have to wait.
I guess that could work.
Even though the loan accumulated by way of buying and selling, as opposed to a regular direct loan, this too is forbidden.
This explains why it is forbidden to have two prices for an item. A lower one for paying right away, and a higher one for paying over time. When you buy an item, you owe the storekeeper money as soon as you take it. When the storekeeper allows you to take the item home without paying, what he's actually doing is lowering you the cost of the item. It's as if you say, "I want to lend you the $100 you owe me for the item you're purchasing now, in exchange for the extra $20 you'll end up paying me in the end." Since he's charging the consumer more for borrowing money, he's ribbons. This is forbidden despite the fact that no actual loan took place. The debt was created by way of selling an item.
If an item does have two prices, the consumer would be allowed to pay the lower cash price, but not the higher credit price. This is because there is no loan taking place when you pay straight away. This is very relevant when buying and selling property, where people often give one price for paying within a very short time, and another higher price for a longer payment schedule. This is ribis. The correct approach is to first ask what the payment terms are, and only then give a price. But to offer a two-tier payment scheme is forbidden. Is known as choiv machmas sechiras and applies whenever the loan was created by a debt for work rendered. For example, the employer says to his employee, "I know I owe you $1,000 for last month's work, but I just don't have money to pay you right now. Wait another month and I'll give you $1,200. Forbidden.
is called Chayiv Machmas Matana, a debt created from a monetary gift. This is where a person obligates himself to give a gift at a certain time, and then, unable to pay his obligation, asks for an extension of time in return for giving an extra amount.
For example, a father-in-law who obligates himself to support his daughter and son-in-law with $70,000 over the next 2 years. He then says, I don't have the money at the moment, but wait another 2 months and I'll give you more.
This is ribbis, even though it's a present. The reason is that any time a person pays more to have the use of money he owes other people, it is ribbis.
Form of ribbis is where a person is an orif, a guarantor, for someone else's loan. The borrower defaults on the loan, and the guarantor is approached to pay up the money he guaranteed. The orif says, listen, you're right, I said I would pay you $1,000 on his behalf, but I'm strapped for cash at the moment. Give me 2 weeks to get hold of the money, and I will pay you $1,200 instead.
This is remarkable, as the guarantor neither lent nor borrowed any money. Still, since he's paying extra to be able to hold onto the money for longer, it is ribbis. Let's come back to our credit card case. It seems as if the person borrowed money from the credit card company, which is allowed, you can pay ribbis to a non-Jew. But when we analyze it carefully, we see that is not the case.
When a credit card holder lends his card to a friend, it seems that the friend's purchase is a straight deal between the credit card company and the friend. But legally, that is not really the case. The friend has no legal connection to the credit card company. It's the credit card holder who is their customer. He is the one that is ultimately responsible. If the friend runs off without making good on the payment, who are they going to come after? The friend or the credit card holder? That's right, the holder. He signed the contract with them, and he is the one that is legally bound. So, there are really two independent loans going on here. One between the credit card company and the holder, which is allowed, as the credit card company is not Jewish. And a second, separate loan between the credit card holder and his friend. When the friend pays the credit card company extra, he is paying on behalf of the holder. It's the holder that he owes money to, and so it is forbidden. This is only a problem if the credit card company charges interest and the friend pays the interest. If the payment is interest-free, there is no problem.
Lending one's credit card is probably the most common mistake people make in regards to ribbis. Another application of the same problem occurs when putting one's name down on another person's mortgage.
Say you want to buy a house, but you're young, fresh, out of college. Bank asks you, what are your assets? You say, my set of magazines and a guitar. Banker tries not to laugh. You don't have a good credit rating. Sorry, I can't help you. You leave upset. At home, your parents see you're sad. You tell them what's wrong. Dad says, they know me at the bank. I'll take the loan out in my name, and you can pay me back. He takes the loan out in his name and pays back directly to the bank.
Torah prohibition! Why? Because as far as the bank is concerned, the student is nothing. If the money doesn't come in, who is the bank going to take to court? That's right, the father. So the father's loan with the bank, and the father's...
Father's loan with the bank and the father's loan to the student are two separate loans, and therefore it's ribbis.
Ribbis applies not just to borrowing money, but to borrowing objects as well.
Sure. So,
to borrow half a bottle of cola or oil and return a full bottle will be ribbons. Why? Because you're giving more than you receive in exchange for having had use of an object. This only applies to objects that are meant to be used up, and an equivalent amount returned in its place. That is why there's nothing wrong with paying to rent a car. After all, you could claim, look, I borrowed a car, and I gave back the car, plus the rental fee. Huh? So that should be ribbons, right? I gave back more than I borrowed. No, it's not. Why? Because it's not a loan. It's a rental. The difference is huge. A rental is where the item itself is returned. Not a similar object, but the exact object. The very same one. A loan is where the item that is being borrowed is used up, and a different item will be returned in its place.
So, borrowing a bottle of cola is a loan. You use a drink up and return an equivalent amount. You therefore have to be careful not to return more than you borrowed. Whereas borrowing a chair is not a loan, as you return the very same item you took.
There are four types of ribbis with objects. Returning an item that is worth more than the one you borrowed. So, for example, if you borrowed a loaf of bread, it would be forbidden to return a more expensive type of bread. You can't return a greater amount than you borrowed. So, if you borrowed a half a bottle of oil, you wouldn't be allowed to return a full bottle. Or, if you borrowed three apples, you couldn't return four. Returning an inconsequential amount more is not ribbis. So, for example, if you borrow an apple this size and return an apple this size, it's okay, as people don't really notice the difference. Or, if you borrow half a cup of washing powder and return a tiny amount more, it's okay. There's no need to get out a magnifying glass and be scientific about it. More or less, it's okay. It is forbidden to return an object that is of better quality than the one you borrowed. For example, if you borrowed a cheap brand of 2-ply tissues, but you return a box of 3-ply extra soft tissues. If the price of the item you are returning is higher in the place you are returning it, that would be ribbis. This could happen when you borrow a bottle of drinking water in town and return it during an excursion outside town. Since the price is more in a tourist shop than in the middle of nowhere, it would be ribbis. If you return more because it's easier for you, then that's not ribbis. For example, if after you already bought the item in order to return, you realize that it's a slightly more expensive brand, it's okay, as it's not worth your while to go back to the shop just for that. Or, if you use a more expensive washing powder for yourself at home, and it wouldn't pay for you to specially buy a whole package of the cheaper kind, just to be able to return a cupful to your neighbor, then that's also fine. If it's worth significantly more, you should return less to offset the extra value you are returning. If you can't remember exactly how many items you borrowed and want to return the high amount to be sure you pay back everything, that's also okay, as you're not returning the extra amount because of ribbis, but because you don't want to end up stealing. So, if you're not sure if you borrowed 5 or 6 apples and return 6 to be safe, that's not ribbis. As well. For example, the borrower is not allowed to draw a picture to show his appreciation, buy the lender a gift, write a thank you note, or do any favors that he would not have done before. Similarly, it is forbidden to praise or bless the lender for his kindness. Known as ribbis devarim, this is forbidden, even though it has no financial value.
It means so much to us to have had so much help from our various donors, but we would be remiss not to mention the very generous Mr. Davis, in whose merit we are all here tonight. The shul would not have been built without you. The loan of $1.5 million that you so magnanimously lent the shul is the only reason we made it.
Once again, ribbis, and while it may be a little known fact, it's forbidden. The borrower is also not allowed to greet the lender first.
The rule with all these cases is that anything that Bo would have done, even before the loan was received, he can continue to do. So, if the borrower and lender were friends already, and the borrower would greet the lender or lend him his car before the loan took place, he can continue to do so afterwards as well, as then he is not doing it as a result of the loan. How about saying a simple thank you? This is the subject of dispute among contemporary authorities. Some claim that saying a simple thank you is permitted, as nowadays we say it almost without thinking. Look at it this way. Even if the lender refused to give the loan, the borrower would still say thank you. Others argue and forbid saying thank you. Everyone agrees that thanking the person for his time or effort is permitted, as you're not thanking him for the loan itself. To whom does Rivers apply? The prohibition of Rivers applies not just to the lender and borrower, but to any party involved in the loan. This would include the guarantor, the witnesses, and the lawyer that draws up the contract. Any contract that states that if a payment is not made on time, there will be penalty fees, or the amount will be indexed to inflation, is Rivers. Since almost all contracts today contain such clauses, lawyers really need to be careful. Even the secretary that prints out the paper or gets the parties to sign. The agent who makes the deal. The advertising agent that publicizes the offer. The graphic artist who designs the ad. And the person who sticks up the posters. Transgressing the prohibition of Lewis are still all accomplices to that and also need to be careful.
Let's switch lights on. Thank you everybody for your time. This is a taste of what's all I myself. As I said, there's many, many more hours available online. You can have time to do the Hector Hibiscus section, but everything's available at www.toalive.com. Thank you.
No problem at all, is it?
That's right. That's right. Non-Jewish is fine.